Airplane Intel Podcast, episode 76. This week, we interview returning guest, aviation tax expert, Sue Falkringa.
Let's start from the premise of you're going to owe something to somebody. Let's just try to minimize it and keep you within the law.
We'll discuss everything you need to know about aviation taxes so you can put more money in your pocket, maximize your aviation assets, and keep the IRS away.
Are you an aircraft owner, pilot, or mechanic? Do you want to learn how to increase safety, reduce risk, and save money with your airplane? Then you are in the right place. This is the Airplane Intel Podcast, the only show that tells you how to make aircraft ownership simple, safe, and cost-effective. Featuring the pre-buy guys and brought to you by CoFlight.com. We bring over 100 years combined experience flying, maintaining, and managing all types of aircraft. If you're ready to make smarter decisions and get more out of your airplane, stay tuned.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Airplane Intel Podcast. We're an aviation podcast that focuses on the ins and outs of airplane ownership. I'm Adam. I'm a CFI, AMPIA, and Marine Corps veteran. I'm also joined by my co-host, Don, a seasoned airline transport pilot, AMP, and pre-buy expert. It's our goal to help you make safer and smarter decisions when it comes to buying, maintaining, and selling your personal or business aircraft. On the show, we compare airplanes, interview airplane owners and industry experts, and of course, share real-world tips as professional pilots and mechanics working in the field with aircraft buyers and owners. You can learn more about the solutions we offer at airplaneintel.com. Today's episode is brought to you by our friends at CoFlight.com, intelligent aircraft management software for pilot peace of mind. Our listeners can get a free 60-day trial of CoFlight's innovative desktop and mobile app by heading over to CoFlight.com and entering the promo code PREBUY at checkout. That's Charlie Oscar Foxtrot Lima Yankee Tango.com and entering PREBUY. Trust me when I tell you, once you start using CoFlight, you'll wonder how you ever flew without it. And today's interview is made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. If you'd like to help support the show and get more from our podcast, head over to patreon.com/prebuyguys. Lastly, don't forget to check out the show notes to access episode archives, links, videos, and other free resources for airplane owners by going to airplaneintelpodcast.com. In today's episode, we are covering one of my favorite topics, aviation taxes. Now, you may be asking yourself, what's so interesting about taxes? Well, if you want to save money, reduce your tax liability, and maximize your aviation assets, you need to have a high-level understanding of taxes. If you're planning to purchase an airplane or own one now, whether for business or pleasure, taxes play a major role in your planning and decision-making. Everything from sales and use tax, excise tax, depreciation, deductions, and tax recapturing could cost you big bucks without the expertise and guidance of an aviation tax professional. Fortunately, I know the perfect person to speak with on this topic, and that is Sue Falkringa. Sue will reveal everything you should know about aviation taxes to keep you out of trouble and put more money in your pocket in a fun and interesting way. I really love the way she explains these things because it makes it so simple to understand because she uses real-world examples that we can all relate to. So without further ado, let's catch up with Sue. Today, we're speaking with returning guest Sue Falkringa, known in the business as an aviation taxologist. Sue is an aviation CPA for Wolcott & Associates, here to discuss essential tax considerations for aircraft buyers, owners, and operators. Sue, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Adam. Thanks again for contacting me. We had a great time last time, and we're going to do the same today.
Absolutely. And this is a subject that I really enjoy learning about, Dan. So much to it. So we're going to get right into it. You've been on the podcast before, but for those meeting you for the first time, tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you combined your passion for taxes and accounting with your passion for aviation.
Isn't that kind of a weird combo when you think about it? But kind of related. They're kind of nerdy subjects. Really came up about 20 years ago, amazingly, that I got into aviation, had no interest whatsoever in it before. Matter of fact, I had a fear of flying. I ended up getting involved with a couple of guys that owned an airplane, the current airplane that I own now, Piper Comanche. Just loved it, got into it. A couple of years later, decided we were going to move our family down to Florida, change jobs. I did that, but even doing that, and I was already a CPA working in the accounting industry and the software industry, said, you know, I really would like to find something more closely related to aviation, if it's out there. And my boss, Jed Walcott, used to post an ad in the back of AOPA magazine, where they've got those little ads for different merchandise or whatever. And he was selling at the time these aviation tax guides. And I read the ad, and it's funny because I had seen the ad in there for years and I never paid any attention to it. And I got down here and I looked at it. I'm like, huh, wonder what that's about. So I whipped up a little letter and resume and sent it over to Jed. He called me right up and he said, hey, why don't you come over here for an interview? And I was really more thinking, well, I'd probably go work for a client of his. But as it turned out, I ended up staying here and I've been here ever since. So 2008. I've been at it, and I went back, got a master's degree in taxation because, you know, as a CPA, you do have that background knowledge of tax. I want to say naturally, if you've worked in accounting for very long, but I really wanted to learn more about it, and I did. And all the same time, I kept working on my aviation credentials too. So got my commercial, got my multi-engine. In the past couple of years, got my CFI and my II, learning on both subjects all the time. Absolutely. And they're both dynamic. I mean, as you know, you're into aviation. You know that there's always stuff to learn about aviation. Well, same is true for the tax field. There's always stuff to learn. It's fun.
Yeah. I was going to say something like that. I mean, it seems like it would be always learning and never really dull because there's so much to learn and things to brush up on. And
exactly.
You're having a good time doing it, especially now. I think the real fun in aviation is when you can teach others to fly. As I've discovered recently myself, it really opens your eyes to how wonderful and how fortunate we are to be able to do such a thing.
You said it. It's a blast. And it's just such a wonderful feeling to be able to share that with somebody else. So yeah, the teaching thing is really fun.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you're going to be teaching us a lot about taxes today too, ironically.
That's fine.
So tell us a little bit more about Walcott & Associates and how they help owners and operators navigate tax laws. What are some of the most common issues that you guys deal with your clients?
Okay, so Walcott & Associates, CPA firm, has been in business since about 2008. So we've been around a long time, helping pilots and owners. If I can sum it up in just two words, it's going to be consulting and compliance. Consulting is kind of a big word, but covers a lot of ground. When people buy an airplane, there is a lot of different aspects to it. So it's not just the taxes, but it's the ownership structure. And then the compliance comes in with tax returns. If people are going to use their airplane for business, they're going to have a tax return associated with it. So we help on that side too. Not to say we don't do regular accounting and financial statements and those types of things that we do, but the bulk of our work comes from the consulting and what we call structuring. And then afterwards, the compliance work that goes along with it. The biggest areas that we consult in, let's just say, are going to be the structuring. That's when somebody's going to buy an airplane. Number one, determine they're going to use it for business, because that's the key. If you're going to use it for business, then you've got certain rules to comply with. You've got FAA rules to comply with, and you've got IRS rules to deal with as well. There's the consulting structuring thing on the front end. Always one of the big issues is sales tax. And you probably know this as well from your line of work. People ask about sales tax all the time, and they want to know, how can I not pay sales tax on an airplane? Because an airplane's a big asset. You know, when you go buy a car and it works into your car payment every month, you really don't think about the sales tax. But it's a big number on a car, but it's an even bigger number on an airplane. As we know, we spend a ton of time on consulting on just that one aspect. I'd say that's, in most cases, the driver for most people. Is the sales tax. So it just opens up so many questions of how someone's going to use their airplane, what entity they're going to put it in, can they lease it, and on and on and on. So sales tax, I'd say, is probably a big driver of the questions that we get. Audits, obviously, are another driver. People who own aircraft, I don't want to say they tend to get audited, but it's a big target to look at sometimes. If somebody's taking bonus depreciation, for example, they've got a huge loss on a tax return, it stands out. And the IRS is not putting eyes on every tax return that comes through their system, but they've got algorithms out there that are testing for certain things. And sometimes, if the numbers are right, you're going to be picked for audit. So that's another area that we do a lot of work in, which is tax compliance and auditing, both on the sales tax side and federal income tax side.
Say with our organization, you see a lot of common thread between clients. You're doing a lot of different things for them ultimately, but there's always only a couple of driving forces that bring them to you to begin with. And then that opens up such a can of worms for some of the other things that they need to be thinking about or doing as well. So, yeah, no, I would think that was a great summary and makes a lot of sense. And I think a lot of businesses find themselves in that kind of position. They have different clients that have so many different aspects to their business or to their aviation fleets and all this, and there's a lot to it. And people need to be proactive with the planning from the front end, as you say.
Oh, absolutely.
So, whether they're buying an airplane or they're using it for their business or they're buying several airplanes or chartering, leasing, etc., they need to be doing a lot of planning on the front end. Again, as you said, in compliance with all the IRS and FAA rules. And that's why it's so important to enlist experts like you to help with those matters, because there's no way the client's going to know it all or can study it all. Consultants and the attorney can't know it all either, you know, so very interesting.
And usually we do have a team. And that's why I said the word, it wasn't a good summary, because it's like, you can't summarize it. Mm-hmm. It's such a big topic.
Yes.
When somebody comes to us, we do try to put together a team. They may come with a team. They may say, hey, here's my CPA, here's my attorney. And we always have to involve somebody like yourself for the airplane aspects of the buy. But we also have to have that specific aviation attorney, because there is certain things that are peculiar to aviation that have to be included in your contracts. We want to make sure that that's all good. We really enjoy it when a customer comes to us and says, we just want your help on the aviation thing. And it's like, that's exactly what we want. Mm. We don't want to get your tax return. We don't want to be a threat to your CPA. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. So many of our customers are the CPAs, because they know that it's a specialized industry and they'll call on us to help them with their clients. So that's another avenue we have for our marketing and our customer relations is, hey, there's CPAs out there and attorneys that bring us clients, because they can't know it all.
Right.
And we're happy to do just the airplane part, because that's where we are experts in just the aviation aspects. We don't want to know how your business, you know, your manufacturing business or whatever. We're not the experts in that, but we are the experts in the aviation part.
Yeah, I guess a similar analogy would be like in the medical field, where you have different specialists that can help you with various issues and health-related matters, and your general CPA would be kind of like your general physician. And I think that's a smart move for the other CPAs that are not in the aviation field and the other attorneys not in the aviation field to best serve their clients, is to recommend them or refer them to someone that does know that aspect of what they need.
Absolutely.
So before we get into some of the recent changes in tax laws, which there are some interesting ones, I'd like to do just a kind of a quick review of some other important tax-related topics that affect aircraft owners and buyers. As you alluded to already, something that comes up a lot is this whole thing with sales tax and use tax. Can you just kind of explain the differences between the two, as well as how those are applied?
Sure. So sales tax and use tax, they're really brother and sister. But sales tax is a point in time when you purchase an asset. That's when you pay sales tax. If you didn't pay sales tax, but you're actually liable for the tax, then you're paying use tax. So I'll give you an example. If you, as a citizen of the great state of Florida, you buy anything, but we'll use an airplane. If I bought an airplane and I bought it up in North Carolina, and I brought it here to Florida without paying sales tax when I bought the airplane, because I said, aha, I can buy it in North Carolina, where the tax laws are very lenient, let's say. I can bring it here and I'm not going to owe any tax. No, 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 that's not true. You, as a citizen of the great state of Florida, you bought something that you're going to use in the state of Florida. You do owe sales tax on it. So now it's not sales tax, because I missed that opportunity when I bought it. I didn't pay sales tax, but I'm now going to pay use tax on it. So Florida, like a lot of states, they'll say, okay, well, you paid sales tax in another state. Yeah, we'll give you credit for that, but you owe sales tax here. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the distinction. Sales tax is a point in time, the point of purchase. Use tax is if you still owe the tax, but you didn't pay it at the time of purchase.
Very interesting. And would you pay the sales tax in the state that you purchased the asset, or in the state that you live as a resident?
That's an excellent point, because it's the latter. It's where are you going to consume? That's a term you'll see out on the sales tax law. Am I consuming that asset here? Am I consuming it in North Carolina? No, I'm consuming it here. And we know just from even like the internet laws these days, right? If we buy something, an article off of Amazon, and I sit in the state of Florida, I owe sales tax on it. They're set up to charge me sales tax. So it really is the same thing. It's like, yes, I'm liable for the sales tax when I purchase it because I'm sitting here and I, as a consumer, you know, I have this list of things in the laws of Florida or any state that says you owe sales tax on these things. So you have to pay it. And if you don't, then you're going to owe use tax on it.
Well, you know, as you mentioned, when we buy a car, the sales tax is kind of rolled into the loan and the dealer takes care of the logistics of how we pay it. Where do we go pay our owed taxes for sales or use tax on an airplane?
If we were consulting with you and we said, Adam, you're going to buy an airplane, you're going to put it into service here in the state of Florida, you have a choice. You can pay the sales tax at the time you purchase it, or as an alternative, you can lease it to yourself. Florida allows related party leases, as do most states. Not every state. The laws can be slightly different. So you could apply to be a what we call a reseller. You could get a resale certificate, which basically says, I'm buying this asset because I'm going to resell it to others. Think of the Home Depot or whatever that rents out equipment. They didn't pay sales tax on that carpet washing machine. They are paying sales tax each time they rent it out. And that's essentially what you're doing with an airplane lease. We'd consult with you and say, Adam, the more tax efficient way to do it would be to set up a lease to yourself or your company, or that's where the structuring discussion comes in. Where's the best place to do this? And you'd pay sales tax only on a lease amount every month rather than paying that big chunk of sales tax. So you can see it's a time value of money thing. It's like if you own the airplane for a long time, you're going to end up paying the same amount of sales tax anyway, but you're better off not spending that money now. Just spend it in little increments along the way.
Good way.
Are you going to buy an airplane? Let us help you.
Exactly. Right. Because as you say, every situation is unique and requires kind of a different strategy based on how the airplane will be used and where it's going to be based and all these sorts of things. But that was a very good synopsis, I think, of sales and use tax we can work with in our heads as listeners and prospective buyers or maybe current owners that didn't quite pay the taxes yet. Something we can kind of chew on and understand a little bit better.
I'll throw this out there as well. I heard this from an attorney long ago. He said, people call me for questions regarding sales tax. They don't want to pay sales tax on the purchase of their aircraft. And we all get it. Of course we don't. But let's not start from that premise. Let's start from the premise of you're going to owe something to somebody. Let's just try to minimize it and keep you within the law. This is a strategy as well. It's like, well, maybe I'm at the border of Florida and Alabama, and maybe Florida's not going to figure out that my airplane is really a Florida airplane. It's an Alabama airplane. You feel like you've got to skirt the law or trying to get away with something. It's like, no, you don't have to. Let's figure out a way to get it to be as minimum as possible.
Makes perfect sense to me. Now, can you kind of explain some of the differences, you alluded to it before, between personal use of an aircraft and business use and how that affects our ability to capitalize on some of the various tax benefits that there are?
Absolutely. That's kind of the key. It's like, if you have business use for your airplane, and when I say that, I mean, it's like a copy machine. I could buy a copy machine and put it in my home and make copies and print to it or whatever, but I don't have any business use for it. It would be nice if I had it. But if I'm going to do accounting at my house and I am going to actually legitimately have business use for that asset, now it becomes deductible. So the same thing holds true for an airplane. It's a great tool. We all know that. It's a time saver. It's wonderful to have an airplane, but do I really have business use for it? So those are the things we explore when a customer comes to us. Do you have legitimate business use? And I'll throw tax code out there. It's simply Section 162. That's ordinary and necessary business use of any asset, of anything you buy. So anything on your tax return for your business, you obviously have business, you know, use. That's why you're deducting them. That's what we're looking at when we're talking about an airplane. Do we have legitimate business use for that airplane? Or this happens all the time too. People buy an airplane and they put it into an LLC to limit liability because somebody told them that was a good idea. and I'm not disputing that it isn't a good idea. I think it is as well. It affords you some amount of liability protection. But just by putting it in an LLC doesn't turn it into a business, and it doesn't make it deductible. So that's what we try to consult on, is to go, okay, what is truly going to be your business use for that airplane? Take you, for example. You've got an excellent need for an airplane. I know you. I think you do. You've got to travel to places to meet with customers. You got to inspect airplanes. You got to do deals, right? So you would have legitimate business use for an airplane. When you would come to us and say, okay, how should I structure this? We want it to be the most tax advantageous as we can. We don't want you to own it personally on your own LLC that's going to show up on your individual tax return. We try to stay away from that as much as we can. We would rather look at your business and say, well, would it be practical to have an airplane in your business for you? I'm going to vote yes. It absolutely would be. Could you buy it in an LLC that was owned by your business? That would, right there, would be the best strategy. Is don't necessarily put it in your business as an asset like you would your copy machine that you bought or your furniture. Let's put it in an LLC by itself, because again, it does put a little bit of a box around it for liability protection. An attorney would tell you that. I mean, I'm definitely not an attorney, but if you talk to an attorney, they're going to recommend the same thing. That right there is oftentimes the best structure to have, because the IRS looks at it and goes, hey, it's just another asset, just like your furniture. It's part of your business, even though it's in a different LLC owned by your business.
That was great. So I guess in a nutshell, we have to prove ordinary and necessary use of the airplane for business. We have to make a case for,
that's exactly
for
right,
us to be able to justify legitimately taking some of the deductions that we can take for an airplane. So it's going to be, again, on a case-by-case basis. Even if the manufacturing company buys the airplane for their business, if they don't have a use for it that's ordinary and necessary for business, then it's going to be kind of tough to make a case, I guess. And the IRS might trigger an audit in that particular instance, perhaps, correct?
That's correct.
And does Wolcott & Associates provide audit support in the event that the IRS does audit?
Absolutely. Airplane audits are unique in a way that if you have a personal tax return audit or even a business tax return audit, there's usually not that many unique things within that tax return. You may have taken the deductions for things maybe you weren't supposed to. Okay. But when it comes to an airplane, that will slow down an audit so much, because the person that's doing the audit generally doesn't know a darn thing about airplanes and how airplanes work. All they see is airplane. Wow. Look at all the tax that they should be paying. Unfortunately, you do get that kind of auditor envy thing going on with airplanes a lot of the time. So unfortunately, that's just part of it.
Well, that's when you take them up and they'll get over that envy a little bit, maybe.
Exactly. I'd say more often than not, well, the audits we've worked on, so obviously they're only airplanes, but they end up not at the auditor level. We take them to appeals, which is a higher level within the IRS. And those appeals agents are more educated. They're long-term IRS employees. It's a battle, because the auditor, the one that's out in the field in the trenches, they want to get that taxpayer and collect that tax. And that's like a positive thing for them, right? Mm. That's what they're going for. Mm-hmm. But the appeal level guy is like, we got to settle this case, get them for a little bit of tax. Well, that's one thing, but they don't want it to go further. They don't want it to go to court. They're trying to get the case settled. In a nutshell, it's like those kind of audits, they're lengthy. They're generally lengthy. But once you get to the appeals process, usually I can't say of any one that I've done since I've been here that has come out unfavorable. They've all come out favorable to the taxpayer.
I assume, too, that you can still use the asset for its intended purpose during an audit process, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So it's a lengthy process, but we can still use the asset as we are in the midst of an audit.
Of course.
Okay, good.
Of course. Very
good. Can you give us kind of a high-level understanding of how depreciation works for 91 and 135 operators?
Sure. So depreciation is just the periodic expensing of the cost of that asset, okay? And some people think that you can say, well, I don't want to do that. I don't want to depreciate it. But it really is mandated by law. If you're going to say that that asset is being used for business, you have to take the periodic expensing of that asset. So really all you're doing is cutting it up into pieces. okay, and saying if it was purely a Part 91 aircraft, you're going to depreciate it over the period of 5 years. Okay, again, this is for that type of asset. It's a mandated by law thing. If you're going to put it with a charter operator, so if it's used just in commercial operations, you're going to depreciate it for 7 years, a little bit longer. But most people have mixed use of their airplane. Those are the types of tax returns we do all the time. You buy an airplane, you have use for it. First of all, you want to keep your airplane running all the time, right? Because we know it's better for using our airplane. It's not just sitting there in the hangar or on the ramp. So you give it over to a charter operator and they utilize it for you. Now, if the predominant use of that airplane is with that charter operator, then you're going to be depreciating that airplane over 7 years. If the predominant use is your use or, you know, your business or leasing or whatever it is, other than that commercial operation, you're going to depreciate it over 5 years. That's really the only time you're calling that Part 91, Part 135 into play, is to try to determine, okay, what has the predominant use? If it changes, there are accounting procedures and tax procedures that you have to go through. If it all of a sudden, hey, your first year you were 80% charter and now you decided, oh my gosh, that was just a mess. I don't want to ever charter my airplane again. It's only going to be used by me, nobody else, till the end of time. Now you've switched. There's some little nuances to that, but that's generally how it works.
When you talk about expensing the value of the asset, we're talking about a paper expense. So on paper, we're expensing it for tax accountability purposes, right?
Thank you for saying that. That's exactly right. It is a non-cash expense. So it's, yay, I got a deduction for something. I mean, yes, you paid money for it because you bought it, but you are just taking a non-cash expense each year. We'll get into the discussion of bonus depreciation and how that works. But if you're doing it over a period of time, yeah, it's an expense you get to show on your tax return that you didn't lay out the cash for. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that explains kind of the life cycle of an airplane too. If you follow the depreciation cycle, that's when you often see the airplane coming back up for sale again after that 5 years or that 7 years or what have you. And that's another important consideration for tax planning purposes as to how you want to schedule that and figure that out in terms of when you sell the airplane again, so you can minimize some of the tax implications that you're going to maybe run into, especially if the airplane is being used for commercial operations where it's making money too. It's part of your revenue source.
Right.
So, and you alluded to it, in 2017, we had the Tax Cuts and Job Act that went into effect, and that brought some changes to the tax laws that affect airplane owners and operators, particularly with the bonus depreciation. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and how that works?
So bonus depreciation has been with us for many years before the Tax Cuts and Job Act. It's come and gone, and say 2016, 2017, that time frame, we did have bonus depreciation, but it was only 50% of the value of the asset. So to say bonus, when we throw out that term bonus, it just means immediate expensing of the asset. So in 2016, 2017, it was 50%. You went out and bought a Challenger, whatever, doesn't matter what you bought, half of the value could be expensed in that first year of utilization of business use if you used it 100% for business. Okay. End of 2017 came along the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and blew that right out of the water and said, nope, you get 100%. Now you get 100% bonus depreciation. And not only that, and this is the first time that this has happened, it's going to apply to used airplanes. So for us in the aviation industry, and I'm sure you saw it too, it just opened the floodgates for the people that couldn't really afford a brand new airplane. They could maybe afford a couple year old airplane. Maybe they had a jet card or NetJets or they were chartering. Now suddenly those people said, wait a minute, I can afford a used airplane and I get 100% bonus depreciation on it. That's amazing. So it changed a lot in that year. And if I think about 2017, that came out in September of 2017. There was a scramble at the end of 2017 to December 31st. There were obviously deals that were in play already, but there was a whole bunch of people going, whoa, I want to get that on my tax return for 2017. So there was a big scramble to see if they could get that asset placed in service. So that's a little industry lingo there, but it's like, yeah, it's not just enough to buy it, but have you used it for a business purpose yet by the end of the year? So could they place it in service by December 31st? So that's the bonus world after Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was 100% bonus depreciation, and it applied to used aircraft. And it was scheduled to start phasing down in, I think, 2023. From 100, it would go down to 80 and then 60. And those years, they were going to trim it back down because, as we know, these are political topics that come up. Are these things going to hold? And that's why they have to end up putting phase downs in there to say, yeah, we're going to get away from it as the years go on.
Yes, makes sense. Now, it sounds like a great thing to take advantage of if you can, like you say, if you're using the airplane primarily for business. But what are some of the overall tax planning considerations that owners should have before they decide, hey, yeah, let's take advantage of the bonus depreciation?
That's exactly right. So number one, we already talked about it. Do you have business use? Okay, because there's no point in taking bonus depreciation on something if you only have 10% business use of something. You can only take 10% of that 100%. You can't just take 100%. Okay, so there's always that to think about. How much business use am I going to have placed in service? When can you place it in service? How much business use are you going to have? So just think of a strategy here. If you're an airplane owner right now, and now you want to step up and buy a new airplane, and you do have some personal use that's happening on your airplane, maybe I want to keep that personal use on the old airplane until I sell it and only use the new airplane for business so that I can capture 100% of the cost of that new and or used airplane. So that's another thing you're going to think about if you're going to do bonus depreciation. Holding period is another consideration. If you're only going to own it for a short period of time, there's no point in taking bonus depreciation. And that's because when you start depreciating an asset, the value of it is going down. Okay, so you spent $100 on an asset and I depreciated it over 5 years or I depreciated it over one. Doesn't matter. Suddenly the value of it, the tax value, is zero, right? Now I go to sell it for $200. I'm recapturing that 100 I already took. It's what we call depreciation recapture. If I take that expense, I got to give it back if I sell it. But these days, we see in the airplane industry anyway, is I'm going to buy a new airplane. I'm going to take bonus on that. A couple of years later, I'm going to sell that one. Yes, I have to recapture, but now I'm going to buy a bigger, better airplane. I get to take bonus on that. So we still get to take advantage of it. Another consideration I'd say is holding period. Is your future known? Can I make those predictions of how I'm going to use it in the future? Or do I have a lot of uncertainty in the future? Another aspect is people have what we call a liquidating event, right? They sell their business. They have a big gain in a year. They want to offset it. So one way to offset it is with bonus depreciation on an airplane. That's kind of a common theme we see coming up. Is all right, well, if you were always going to get an airplane, you can at least offset part of that gain that you had on the sale of your business and offset it with that depreciation expense. So that's another thing to think about if that's in your future.
Interesting. Can you kind of go into a little more detail about the recapturing? Because I think that's probably a area that people don't know much about. I would imagine it's pretty significant, or it can be pretty significant.
It doesn't even matter if you're selling your airplane for a gain or for a loss, but that depreciation that you took, you'll take that back as, in most cases, ordinary income on your tax return. It's because, like I said, the value of that asset is going down year after year. Tax-wise, it doesn't have any value left to it anymore. So you got the benefit of the expense through the years, but it's now like you got to pay it back when you sell it. So that's why you're recapturing a deduction that you previously took.
Oh, yeah, makes sense. And so that might be a factor in the decision-making whether to take advantage of the bonus depreciation or just standard depreciation.
You're very correct on that because people are blinded by the bonus depreciation. That's the big shiny thing,
right?
The piece of candy. I get to take bonus depreciation, but they don't think about the fact that they're going to have to recapture that depreciation when they turn around and sell the asset.
So shifting gears a little bit, what are or are there any tax advantages and disadvantages for owners that choose to lease their aircraft to other operators? We've talked about maybe leasing it to yourself, but how would that work with maybe leasing the airplane to a different operator altogether?
There's sales tax implications to that as there are income tax implications. generally speaking, it isn't Florida specific, but many states have use tax. Well, it's really sales tax that's going to be due on lease payments. So if you start leasing, you're going to have sales tax due in most cases. Again, this doesn't apply to all 50 states or anything like that, but one of the implications is sales tax. And we certainly don't want to get into a situation where we paid sales tax on the purchase of an airplane, then we turned around and leased it, and now we owe sales tax on those lease payments. We want to devise a strategy where if we're going to lease, we try to do that right off the bat so that we're paying sales tax in that lower increment. Leasing also has implications to the deductibility of those expenses. If you turn your airplane over to a charter operator, we'll just use the extreme example. You never operate it as a Part 91 operator in your business. You just bought it. You want to have access to it, but you turned it over to a charter operator. They're the ones that are chartering it. They're the ones who are making the calls, who rides on it, and who doesn't. They're the managers of it. If you do that, you are a passive recipient of income, okay? You didn't earn it. Somebody else is earning it for you. They're out managing that asset for you. Therefore, it's a passive activity to you. So you will get that charter income on your tax return or business tax return. Just you're going to have expenses. Of course, you're still going to have depreciation. You're still going to have maintenance. You're still going to have insurance. You're still going to have hangar. All those things are expenses, but you can't take them yet because they're passive. Passive is a whole set of tax rules that you have to comply with when it comes to earning income when somebody is out there kind of doing the work for you. You don't get to take those deductions right away. They still are on your tax return and they're reported. It's just that they're set aside with what we call suspended until such time as you dispose of the activity or dispose of the airplane. Let's assume it's going to be losses. In most cases, it is with an airplane because you've got always that big depreciation hit. So you're accumulating these losses every year. You're getting that charter income, but you're not taking those expenses until such time as you dispose of it. So leasing has huge, huge planning implications when it comes to airplanes. Sales tax is the one that kind of gets us going a lot of times. That might be the trigger, but it's like, wait a minute. You got to think about how are you going to show this income? You know, you're fully expecting, hey, I'm going to lease it. And I'm going to get bonus depreciation for this thing. Maybe you won't be able to.
Right. Well, a common thread from our interview today and our previous interview was you got to be proactive and get the advice from the right people all the time. And it's a team effort because there are so many different things that people try to do and we're able to do. FAA says we can do various things and the IRS says we can do various things and the state laws and so on. But we got to make sure that we're careful with how we go about doing it because they all affect each other in a way.
They absolutely do. You can't always have the best of all of those aspects. Sometimes it's a little bit of trade-off. What is it really that's going to benefit you the most? Are the business deductions, are those the most important thing to you? Okay, well, then we have to do this strategy. If the leasing is the most important aspect to you, these are the results that that's going to create. Can we live with that? But you're right. It's planning up front.
That's a really interesting point. And I think, as you know, as an airplane owner, a lot of aircraft owners and buyers have to make compromises when it comes to buying the airplane because different airplanes do things well, other things not so well. So you got to really determine what's the most important aspect for you so we can help you find the right airplane to meet that mission that you have. So it's the same kind of concept with the balancing the tax advantages that we might have. So this is kind of something you've been dealing with a little bit more recently. Tell us about some of the recent changes that occurred for aircraft operators and owners from the CARES Act.
Let's just say we're kind of in ramp-up mode for those things right now because they made some changes in March with the CARES Act, but there's three things that came out of that that affect aircraft. Some of those things are implemented right now. One of the changes is excise taxes, which we haven't touched on here, but excise taxes come into play if you, well, if you've ever bought an airline ticket, you're paying excise taxes on it. You'll see that you have a passenger tax of 7.5%. And you also have a segment fee tax that's due. So for most of us, that was our only connection to excise taxes. But once you start chartering your airplane, when someone charters your aircraft, they have to charge excise taxes on that charter. The operator of the airplane is dealing with excise taxes. And usually you, as the airplane owner, you've given it over to your charter operator. You aren't dealing with that so much. But there could be a point where you are dealing with excise taxes in that you might have a timeshare agreement. And that's kind of a unique little animal that says, well, we all learned in private pilot school how much can we get reimbursed for a flight? Okay, so there's those rules. Then as a commercial pilot, how much can we charge for this flight? So we've got some FAA rules in terms of how much can we pay for a flight. Those bump up against what we want to do as an airplane owner. It's like, well, I want to lease my airplane. Well, you can charge whatever you want. But we just talked about it, our passive loss rules and so forth. But a timeshare agreement says, okay, it's almost like a mini airline. I'm going to timeshare my airplane out to, say, my employees, my managers of my company. I'm going to charge X. But if I charge X, I have to add excise taxes onto it. That's where we might tend to dabble in the excise taxes. So the reason I went down that road is excise taxes are on a holiday as of March, I think it was the 28th, until December 31st. No excise taxes. And the fuel tax credits are also supposed to be eliminated. So for charter operators, that's a big deal. They're always in that tracking mode of tracking excise tax, charging it, collecting it, and remitting it. It's a pass-through tax. It's a fiduciary thing. It's just like a payroll tax, right? I withhold from your paycheck, but I have to turn it over to the government. That's the same way excise taxes work. So those taxes went on holiday until the end of the year. So if you buy an airline ticket right now, you're not going to pay that 7.5% ticket tax. You're not going to pay the segment fee or the international facilities fee. I kind of look at it and go, well, who did that help? I don't know. Yeah. Because it's not that big of a deal. It is for the airline industry. I assume it is, in just something they don't have to worry about for the time being. Mm-hmm. Anybody with a timeshare agreement. So there's that. Now, something that came out of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was a limitation on the net operating losses that we could take for a business. Years prior, we could carry those losses backwards on a tax return. So it's like if I incurred a loss on a tax return and I had income in a prior year, I could elect to take that loss, carry it backwards. Okay. And then it carried forward if I didn't utilize it. This helped a lot of people, especially like 2008, 9, and 10, where we had losses all over the place for businesses, just bad economy. So Tax Cuts and Jobs Act truncated that a little bit and said, nope, you can't carry those losses back anymore. You can carry them forward indefinitely. Think of the airplane owning company. Again, big bonus depreciation or even depreciation all told. Those are usually big numbers we're dealing with and they do generate losses. So we were limited by the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in carrying those losses back. And then now with the CARES Act, they took that truncation off. Now you can carry back again and you can carry forward. I don't know. I'm sure there were political aspects to it of why that happened like that, but it was a good thing because it's kind of like, you know, there's going to be not just airplane businesses, you know, there's going to be losses out there this year just from businesses. Boom, open the floodgates. Now we can take those losses backwards again and carry them forward also. So that's one thing that came with the CARES Act. Again, kind of not pointed directly at the airplane industry, but it certainly does benefit us. The other thing that came out of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and now has changed with the CARES Act is what they call excess business losses. Before, there was nothing to stop you from taking losses other than those net operating rules that I just talked about. Excess business losses started with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in that they said for certain structures, you can only take X amount of a loss. We're going to have you add up your passive activities, your passive losses, and your ordinary and necessary business losses. And we're going to smoosh those all together. And then there's going to be a cap on it. We always call those haircuts in taxes. Why? I don't know. But they go, okay, there's your deduction, but you don't get to take it off. But you do get to carry it forward as a net operating loss. So that came out of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Now for the CARES Act, they changed the limitations on that. They loosened it up. They didn't eliminate it, but they changed some of the percentages we're looking at. So when we're making the calculations, it's more favorable. Again, they didn't totally take it away, like would have been nice, but these excess business losses obviously kind of work in conjunction with the net operating loss. So those are kind of the big three I see that tangentially, I guess, affect us in the airplane business.
And it did not bring back the 1031 exchange that kind of went away during the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, right?
Correct. It didn't. But we've really dealt with that successfully, I think, with having bonus depreciation. The 1031 exchange was great. It was a mechanism. right, to offset and carry forward that gain. It was kind of like everybody used it as a strategy when they were stepping up in the airplane world and selling their old airplane. Now it's just two transactions. It's like, okay, you figure out the gain or loss on your airplane. Now you buy your new one, you get bonus. There are some nuances to that where you may not work as well as a 1031 exchange, but it still works pretty well.
Well, Sue, we've talked a lot already. We've covered a lot of ground and learned a lot from you so far. As we kind of wrap up here, I mean, you've been giving us advice this whole time, but do you have any specific advice for aircraft buyers and owners right now, given the current kind of state of where we are in aviation and in the economy and the tax laws and everything else?
Two things I'll touch on. I was on the phone yesterday with the Florida Aviation Business Association. I'm a board member. And every one of the people who are from all different walks of the aviation business world, there's not two of us alike on that board. Every single one of them had positive things to say about general aviation as it stands right now. And it was just so good to hear. I think we've been focusing on the bad so much and what isn't working right now. And it was so just refreshing to hear everybody. We've got FBO operators that are saying, hey, some of us have not skipped a beat when it's come to general aviation. That was wonderful to hear. There is a software salesman that works with just aviation software. And he said, it was our best month ever last month. Unbelievable. It's like we're thinking things are so bad out there in the business world. And it's like, I don't think so. I think the future for the business aviation world is so bright because people, again, like I said, with the bonus depreciation, they may have been on the fence about buying an airplane. They had motivation. I think now they have a lot of motivation to have their own aircraft, or at least get into a partnership with some other people and utilize that airplane. So I think the future is bright. People, they're going to be wanting to give those benefits to the people that are in their companies, their managers, and it's not just going to be for the upper management of a company anymore to ride on an airplane. I think people want to keep people safe. So there's that. The other thing is, you touched on it very early on in the conversation. When you do a pre-buy on an airplane, you're consulting with an expert to look at all aspects of it because you don't know that airplane, or we hire you to help me pick out that best airplane to fit my needs. And I would encourage anybody, if they're going to buy an airplane and they're going to use it for business, absolutely take the deductions for it. But do your homework on those aspects just as you would on the airplane. Doesn't have to be a call to me, but it's got to be a call to somebody in the aviation business world. Those are people that are going to be on your team to help you figure out what's the best way to go with all those aspects we talked about today. Depreciation, sales tax, you know, those are the big dollar amounts. When it comes right down to it, you've got to have people who are going to provide that service to you. If it's going to be a sales tax filing every month, do you have staff to do that? Or is that something that you want to hire out to professionals? And then obviously the tax returns. You're doing that pre-buy, but you're doing it on your, not just these purchasing issues, but how am I going to function this tax return and these business deductions on down the road?
Yes, that's a great point. It's a team effort. And really, it's good insurance to do your due diligence on the front end. It makes your life so much easier than when you make decisions kind of haphazardly or maybe not thinking it through all the way without reaching out to an expert on it. And it's cheap insurance too, really, especially when we're talking about the dollar amounts that these airplanes are and everything else. So I think that's a great point. I also agree with your point to the future of general aviation, business aviation, I think is going to be very bright in the coming years, particularly following the coronavirus, but definitely going to be good for us. So I look forward to the future to see what that's going to bring and really show people what general aviation is all about, and the utility that it does bring us is pretty much second to none, at least currently. Drones and other things might change that in the future.
Absolutely.
But it'll be great. Sue,
yep.
Really great speaking with you. How can listeners learn more about Wolcott & Associates, and how can they reach out to you specifically?
So you can find us on the web, aviation-cpa.com. That's our primary website for the consulting and tax work. We also offer a application, so you can find that at flighttaxsystems.com. And that application helps us with the tracking of business use and personal use for your aircraft. And when you get into some of those more complicated scenarios, when you have cost disallowance, And these little tax nuances, we'll call it, those types of things can be tracked within our software. So that's flighttaxsystems.com. If you go to aviation-cpa.com, you can see that a button right on that website. My email address, I'm sure Adam will put that in the show notes, suef@aviation-cpa.com. Feel free to call us or email us. Let us know you heard me with Adam, and I always give him that feedback too. I do get a lot of calls. It's wonderful.
Excellent. And I will put all those links to the websites and to your email into the show notes at airplaneintelpodcast.com. Sue, it's been a pleasure speaking with you once again, and I hope to speak with you in the future as well. I'd love to talk to you about your Comanche on an upcoming interview as well. I think that'd be really neat to learn.
I would
about.
Love that.
Excellent. So great speaking with you, Sue. Thank you for your time, and it was a pleasure having you on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Adam.
Thanks again to Sue for sharing her years of experience with us. I always learn so much from her, and I hope you guys did too. You can find all the links we mentioned in this interview and reach out to Sue directly, as well as check out some extra resources on aviation taxes by heading over to our show notes at airplaneintelpodcast.com. And while you're there, we'd love to hear from you, so send us your questions and feedback by using the contact form or voicemail app. Now be sure to stick around for our next episode, because we'll be interviewing the owner of a Beechcraft Baron to get his perspective on owning, maintaining, and flying this popular piston twin. We also plan on having Sue back on the podcast to talk about her ownership experience with the Piper Comanche and much more. So if you're not already subscribed to the show, please hit that subscribe button now so you don't miss an episode. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave us a rating and review on whatever podcast player you're listening from. We really value your feedback, and leaving us a rating and review helps other airplane owners and aviation lovers find the show a little bit easier. Well, that just about wraps it up for us this week. Thank you so much for spending your time with us. We really appreciate it and look forward to seeing you for the next episode. Until next time, keep the dirty side down and stay safe.
Thanks for listening to the Airplane Intel Podcast. If you liked what you just heard, we hope that you'll subscribe to our show and leave us a rating or review. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching Airplane Intel. To access show notes, episode archives, and other free resources, visit us at airplaneintelpodcast.com. To get a 60-day free trial of CoFlight, head over to coflight.com and use the coupon code PREBUY. Also, if you'd like to support our show, visit us on patreon.com/prebuyguys. And remember, owning an airplane doesn't have to be hazardous to your wealth.